Central Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Up next, Ecotopia, and we'll be talking about recycling, green design, and manufacturers taking responsibility for the environmental impact of their products.
This is KZFR 90.1 Chico, and you are listening to Ecotopia, a weekly program exploring ecosystems, environmental, social, and technological.
Our guest today is Doug Cobalt. He's Executive Director of the California Product Stewardship Council. CPSC has recently announced its Aero Awards, which recognize California businesses for outstanding leadership, innovation, and partnerships in product stewardship and green design. We'll also talk with him about the other work of CPSC. This is part of our ongoing series on radical change.
Ecotopia is made possible by the generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by the Corona Conscious Certified Chico Certified Farmers Markets. With year-round markets on Wednesday mornings at the North Valley Plaza and on Saturday mornings at 3rd and Wall in downtown Chico, the Chico Certified Farmers Market, connecting farmers and food lovers since 1980. The opinions voiced on Ecotopia do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers. We'll be back to talk to Doug Cobalt about the work of the California Product Stewardship Council and its Aero Awards. This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 in Chico. I'm Susan Chudy, and with us on the phone is Doug Kobold. He is the Executive Director of the California Product Stewardship Council, more commonly called CPSC. CPSC has recently announced its Aero Awards, which recognize California businesses for outstanding leadership, innovation, and partnership in product stewardship and green design. We'll also learn why our treatment of waste requires radical change.
And I'm Stephen Chudy. Doug has worked in the solid waste and recycling industry for over 28 years. He's been executive director of CPSC for 2 years. Welcome, Doug Kobold.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys today.
Thank you.
Thank you. We want to, before we get to the Aero Awards that we're going to talk about at length in the show, please tell us a little bit about CPSC. What's its mission, what's its goals, and where are you located?
Oh, we're located in Sacramento. We're a nonprofit 501c3, small organization of four employees who basically advocate on behalf of local governments and some private entities in the realm of product stewardship and producer responsibility. Our mission is to get the producers of products that we buy every day in stores, in electronic stores, and get them to help with the cost of end of life of these products. Because the traditional model is you create a widget and you use all your materials to make that widget and you get it sold out on the market and then you're pretty much done with it. And whatever happens on the back end when it's no longer useful, well, that's somebody else's problem and somebody else's concern for the cost of handling that. Well, that doesn't lead to very good design up front if you're not having to take some kind of ownership of the end of the life, those end of life costs of those products. And so where we step in is we say, look, producers, we want you to be able to design these products greener, and we don't want the cost of your product where you make the profit to be borne upon local governments, because basically what local governments are doing is they're either having to pass the cost on to the ratepayers through the garbage bills or through taxes and through the general fund, depending on how they're structured. And so the only folks that are really feeling the pinch of this are really us as residents and business owners who are paying the garbage bill. And so our goal is to get the producers to think greener, participate in making better products that are reusable, repairable, or recyclable, and right. They don't just end up in the trash.
Right, right. So you said at the beginning that you partner with other organizations or you work in behalf of other groups. Is that what you said, or did I misunderstand?
Yeah, so we are funded primarily through local government contributions and then grant work. And so that's why I say we advocate on behalf of local governments, because they're the ones putting most of these bills currently.
Okay, I understand. Yeah, so you work all over the state?
That is correct.
Okay.
In your email to us, Doug, you said, and I quote at some length, I'll quote, "Our recycling industry is in crisis. Things need to change, whether it be bottles and cans, other recyclable materials, or materials that shouldn't even enter our waste stream to begin with. We need to make some big changes. The single-use packaging, especially single-use plastics, are having a significant detrimental effect on our environment. We need to turn the tide before it is too late." What does "before it is too late" mean?
Well, you probably have heard the stories about, and they're very true, these studies have shown that by 2050, we will have as much plastic by weight in the ocean as we do fish.
Oh, my gosh. Hmm. No, I haven't heard that statistic.
Oh, yeah. It's actually very scary. I'm sure you've heard of the Great Garbage Patch.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, we've
ocean.
Done.
So that is, again, more evidence that we are just overloading our waterways with these plastics that don't decompose, they don't break down, and they get ingested by our wildlife, and especially our aquatic life.
Right.
The plastics come in a number of forms. They can be in microplastics, which basically bleeds off of the surface of the plastic container, for example. We, as as humans consume, there's studies that show we now consume the equivalent of one credit card of plastic a week.
Wow.
Through the products we use. And so we are trying, we at CPSC are trying, along with a lot of other organizations, to try and stem the tide there and prevent what is ultimately going to be just devastating when we have more plastic than we do fish.
Is there a tipping point here? Obviously, better for us to act now than later.
Yeah, some experts will tell you we're already past that tipping point.
Right. Uh-huh.
But unfortunately, we can't rely on that. We have to do whatever we can now, assuming we are not beyond that tipping point. But if we assume we are, then what's the point of even trying?
Yes, right. We have to do that with a lot of issues right now. So does CPSC do anything following or about cleanup, or is it all about doing things in advance, as you said, to stem the tide of products and to get people to take responsibility?
Well, so our hope is that as we work with these things, and we work with a lot of hard-to-manage products, like single-use propane cylinders, one-pound propane cylinders that you would take for your barbecue, for example, mm-hmm. those get wasted. They get they may get recycled, but even probably a quarter of them get recycled. The rest are actually trashed.
Wow.
And so we run programs and campaigns such as our Refuel Your Fun campaign, which some of your listeners may actually have one of our one-pound reusable cylinders that can be refilled up to more than 100 times, can last up to at least 10 years, and pay for themselves within 4 to 5 uses. And then you're not generating that 1 pound metal canister every time you use a disposable. So we try to get ahead of it. And there's one where we did not need legislation yet to get ahead of the curve and start stemming, guiding folks to use reusables over disposables. But if we can't get enough traction to where we truly make a difference, then we turn to legislation. Then we will get behind legislators who are environmentally friendly and are happy to carry our bills and our ideas as part of their priority as well to make a difference. And sometimes we have to go down that road to force some of our industries, to be more responsible. We hope that we always try to get them to be voluntary, responsible, and more green, but we'll take the legislative road if we need to.
Just an aside, I want to get one of your recyclable the smaller ones. I refill my big ones, but I'm afraid I'm guilty of throwing out the smaller ones.
Well, if you go to refuelyourfun.org,
okay,
all one word,
mm-hmm.
you can. There's a map there, and you can find out where there's a retailer near you. And I believe we have several retailers in Chico,
all right,
and Butte County that would be able to be happy to sell you one, or
great.
Two or three.
All right. Yes.
So, how do you get to this? I didn't send you this question in advance, but now I'm really curious about it. About how you get to the government entities that you're working with. How does your outreach work to get to governments that you want to get on board with the things that you're advocating?
Absolutely. We actually have a 14-member board. Most of which are local government representatives. They're not elected officials. They are staff of local governments. And then we have about 120, 130 local governments who contribute to CPSC and are part of our policymaking process. And so we're informing them on a monthly basis what's going on, what are we seeing as far as what's in the legislature now, how it's going to affect them. And then we also get advice from them, either through just direct input or when we do surveys with them, what are they seeing? What are they facing out there running their solid waste facilities or their household hazardous waste facilities? What's important to them? And then we'll take that forward to push change. And so it's a very interactive process. I love interacting with all of my associates and my sponsors who are our private sector folks that are also helping out CPSC to get these things resolved and get us into a better situation than what we are now.
And I know there's a law on the books. I learned from our waste management manager, that requires that there be a composting, big composting thing to take care of waste that can be composted, and it has to be done by, I don't know, 2030. Does that sound familiar, or am I just making this up?
Oh, no, no, it's very familiar. It's very, very important to local governments right now, because, and especially to ratepayers of the garbage bills, because they're going to see an increase in their garbage bill as a result, in order to accommodate the goals of Senate Bill 1383, which was passed back, I believe, in 2015, which requires that all, that the state as a whole, divert 50% of the organics generated in our garbage now, that's in our garbage now, divert 50% of that by 2020.
Okay.
Which we are right in right now.
That's it. This is 2020.
And then 75% of that by 2025. And so local governments are working diligently to try and create programs to take that organic waste out of the garbage can, get it into the organic can, and then get it to a proper facility, a composting facility that can handle that type of material. But there are a lot of concerns about what exactly is going to get into those cans, and will it truly compost in the commercial scale composting operations we have today? So there's a lot of back and forth going on about that right now. It's been a very hot topic, and will continue to be for some time. But yeah, the date, is, the big date is 2025. When we have to hit that 75%.
And do you have evidence about how people are on target with this? I know that they're struggling in Butte County.
That's both counties are struggling with this.
Okay.
There's a couple reasons why. One would be there's this cost component that's going to be huge. And you can see potentially $10 to $15 per month in your utility bill increase for the garbage, for this recycling of organic. So that's the average that's out there right now statewide of where the impact will be. If you're one of the communities that was already doing this, you won't see quite as much impact. But if you're starting basically from just a usual green waste, yard waste, composting operation in your jurisdiction, in your community, then you're going to see these increases come, because they'll have to send these materials that can no longer go to a traditional composting facility. They're now going to have to go to a more advanced composting facility that can handle this higher intensity organic waste with the food waste in there.
And I'm not sure, I'm sorry, go ahead,
no,
finish.
Go ahead.
I'm not sure all of those are in place, even those big composting units that are supposed to do this.
That's correct. There's a statewide need of over 100 new compost facilities, and somewhere between $3 to $5 billion of investment needs to be made to construct these facilities statewide to handle the influx of material that will be now being sent to these types of facilities.
We'll need to invite some of the Butte County people onto the program to talk about this so we can learn what's happening.
I wanted to go back to what you were talking about earlier, though, because we just listed all of the very difficult waste products that are hard to deal with. And you mentioned the gas cylinders, but I'd like to talk about some more of these and what is problematic and what can be done. And I'll just quickly say them, and then you can talk about ones that interest you. Batteries, mattresses, carpet, packaging, fluorescents, paint, you mentioned gas cylinder, we talked about that. Pharmaceuticals really interest me. Green chemistry, sharp, solar panels, textiles, thermostats, tobacco. And I think Steve has some that he especially wants to talk about.
No, I wanted to get in on the pharmaceuticals and also the sharps. Also, as I looked at your website, you've clearly had successful work with Alameda, but it sounds like from the website it was a struggle for Alameda to get some of its restrictions on pharmaceuticals and sharps into place. Had to go to court over it.
Yes, they did. And why don't I start with that one? Because that is one of our crowning achievements of late, which was the passage of Senate Bill 212 by Senator Jackson and Assemblymembers Ting and Gray. This was passed in 2018. What it does is it requires the pharmaceutical industry to provide medicine take-back collection bins at pharmacies that want to host a bin free of charge to the consumer. So that's one half of it, is the pharmaceutical side. So basically, if you have prescription meds, over-the-counter meds, prescribed ointments or lotions, You can drop those in those bins free of charge, and it'll be properly handled and disposed of without, because one of the biggest things we see as a problem is old medications. You get a prescription for 50 Vicodin, and you only take two. Well, okay. Traditionally, what happens is they'll sit in folks' medicine cabinets or in their medicine drawers in their bathrooms, and several things can happen. One, it could be mistakenly gotten to by children who might overdose on them. There's a lot of cases of overdose of prescription meds by young children who didn't know any better. If it's seniors, they might have their old meds and their new meds in the same drawer, and maybe they're just separated, and they get confused, which causes overdoses because they haven't gotten rid of those old meds. Then you can have folks that come into your home, or maybe they live in your home, maybe it's a teenager in your home, who take those schedule 2 to 5
yes,
opiate drugs, and purposely remove those to use them for things like Skittles parties.
Yes.
Is what we've heard. And I know, about a year and a half ago, or there was a mass overdose there in Chico, and was really unfortunate to hear that happen. Fortunately, I don't believe anybody passed away, but there was a lot of hospitalizations with that. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe that was the details of that.
Mm-hmm.
And being a graduate of Chico, I paid close attention to that.
I wondered about your 530 area code on your phone.
Yeah, I live in Davis, but I am a graduate in civil engineering from Chico back in 1992. I'll age myself here. So that's part of the pharmaceutical take-back program, is to get these medications out of these medicine cabinets easily for consumers, for the patients, so they don't have to worry about, well, what did I do with those? What should I do with them? I don't want to throw them away. I don't want to pour them down the drain because they'll get into the waterways.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, if you flush your extra medications down the toilet or wash them down the drain, they will get into the wastewater treatment system. The wastewater treatment plants cannot get these pharmaceuticals out. They do not have the technology capable of doing that. It would be extremely expensive in order to do that. So those pharmaceuticals are discharged into the surface waters. And so, for example, myself living down here in Davis, we now draw our water out of the Sacramento River. So when that water is drawn out of the Sacramento River, it is drawing chemicals that are in the river from discharges from you guys and others upstream.
Right.
Now, the next problem is the water treatment plants also cannot get this out. So we are now ingesting and bioaccumulating pharmaceuticals from the drinking water. Now, then you also have the problem of bioaccumulation within the aquatic life. And they're finding changes in hormonal structure and et cetera in aquatic life. There's significant changes. There's a lot of resistance to bacteria because of the antibiotics. So our aquatic life are being less resistant to diseases because of all the bioaccumulation they're having of these pharmaceuticals. So the best thing we could possibly do is get these things out of the medicine cabinet so they don't, you also don't have someone coming into your house who wants to use your bathroom, and they're not there to use their bathroom. And we've seen stories. We've actually had one down here in Sacramento where a gentleman was posing as a fire marshal and was going to homes of elderly and saying he was there to inspect their smoke detectors. But then he would ask to use their restroom, and after he left, they'd find out that he took all of their medications.
Oh, my gosh. Well, I'm one of those people who's never known what to do with those medications that I no longer use. So, you know, yeah, they sit in my cabinet for years and years, and with nobody saying this, we'll take them.
I think you said Walgreens has been exemplary in setting up some disposal bins.
Yeah, we gave an award to Walgreens a few years back for their leadership in taking on creating their own take-back program within their stores, but we've expanded that dramatically. So if you go to takebackdrugs.org, your listeners can go there. There is this is another program that we administer and we've created. You can go to a map and then type, go zoom in on the map or put your address in, and you can find a drug take-back or a med take-back bin close to you.
Mm-hmm.
And we
actually
recently installed bins in Chico, in the Chico and Butte area, for folks to use, in addition to the bins that were already there for CVS and Walgreens. So that's part of a big grant that we had with the state, that we've been installing extra bins. We've installed 185 new bins across the state.
Mm-hmm.
to help combat this. But in the meantime, SB 212, or Senate Bill 212, which is the one that's going to require the pharmaceutical industry to take this over, the regulations are almost done, and then there will be probably about a year, year and a half time frame to get the program up and running with the pharmaceutical industry, and then they will have to take over all the bins that where pharmacists want them to take over the bins at their expense. So the folks that are making huge profits off of the pharmaceuticals they're selling us will then at least now have to take ownership of the cost of the end of life of these products, that these unwanted meds, these unwanted prescription meds that we don't want. Mm-hmm. So,
you'd also mentioned disposal of sharps. What kinds of sharps are you trying to recycle? In particular, we have a huge debate in Chico over a needle exchange program, hypodermic needles found in public areas, and so forth. Tell us a little bit about the sharps program.
Okay, and so the other part of SB 212, the second half I mentioned, mm-hmm. is actually a requirement of the sharps manufacturers, of the needle manufacturers, to provide a safe return container at the point of sale. So when you go in and you buy 50 needles, they have to provide you with the pharmacist or wherever you buy it from, have to provide you with a container that is capable of safely holding all 50 needles. Hmm. Now, that will be free of charge to you. Currently, you may pay $5, $10, $15 for that container, especially if you have diabetics listening in. They know this all too well, how much it costs them to get the proper disposal of containers, and then have to find, where can I take this back? Because while there is a law to require pharmacies to take back the sharps containers, that's not always adhered to. And so this will make it now mandatory for the producers of the needles to provide these sharps containers to the pharmacists and other stores that sell the needles, so that then they're not incurring that cost and dealing with those sharps that they make very little profit margin on to begin with. So that'll also be rolling out in about a year and a half, where you'll start to see those containers being provided for free. In the meantime, there are some communities that have sharps bins located within the community. You can find, if you go to sharps disposal, if you type sharps disposal in Google, you'll be able to find some locations that exist now. But you can also, your household hazardous waste facilities will typically take these in. And that's another nice thing about SB 212. When you take these back to the household hazardous waste facility, normally they would incur that cost. So your local government would incur that cost. Now, the needles manufacturers will have to actually either pick those needles up themselves and incur the cost of disposal themselves, or reimburse the local government for those costs. So again, mm-hmm. it's a saving to the local government.
So on your website, you have this list of problematic products. Do you have that information on your website?
Oh yeah. Yeah, absolutely. We cover, as you visited our website, you've seen, cover a myriad of products.
Yes.
What we've been focusing on lately. So let's talk about a couple programs that are in place, a few programs that are in place already. So you mentioned carpet, mattresses, and
seats.
So all three of those actually have statewide programs in place now. They are what we call product stewardship. They are not extended producer responsibility, or EPR, because they don't... Because the manufacturers don't pay into the program. The manufacturers, they have no money, no skin in the game at all. They actually operate the programs. That's just the way the legislation was constructed, but they're not paying into the program. So who pays for it? We do, as consumers. So if you buy a gallon of paint, you pay 75 cents of mm-hmm. check stand for each gallon. If you buy a mattress today, say you buy a king-size mattress, which is three pieces. It's the mattress and the two box spring pieces. You're going to pay $10.50 per piece, or you're going to pay $31.50 to the retailer as an advanced recycling fee. Or if you're talking about carpet, it's 35 cents per square yard currently to recycle, and that goes into a fund to help pay for the ultimate recycling of the carpet. And so all those funds are managed by the industry. They're not funded by the industry. And so again, here's where we get into, well, if the manufacturers aren't paying in any way, what's their drive to make their products greener, make them last longer, make them more durable, and there isn't any when there's no skin in the game for them.
Right.
For items that are not covered right now under any kind of product stewardship or EPR category, we have batteries, and so actually CPSC co-sponsored a bill this year in the California legislature, to have all batteries collected and then properly recycled. and have retailers be the ones collecting these. We did not get this bill through this year because of a myriad of things, including COVID. COVID actually slowed our bill down significantly. We do have planned to reintroduce the bill next year, and have we've got the same author who's willing to carry it. He's very excellent at doing this. And so we're hoping that we have a battery collection system statewide in place, hopefully sometime, at least get it started next year. Now, who will fund that? Will it be manufacturers who make the batteries? Will they be the ones funding it? Or will it be us as consumers paying a fee, like maybe 3 cents per AAA battery or 4 cents per AA battery, kind of like what we already do for the 5 and 10 cents for our bottles and cans, but not necessarily a deposit system. We don't want to have to have retailers trying to figure out how they're going to give money for every battery that's turned in. It's just going to be more of an advanced recycling fee that will go into a fund to get these things recycled properly so that folks have an avenue. Now, our hope is to get the manufacturers to pay for that, but we may end up having to negotiate something somewhere in the middle, maybe. Maybe it's a shared responsibility, which is where we want to go when we can, is at least get the producers to be paying something in so that they do a better job with what they're doing.
And we've talked on this program several times with people who said, we have to own up the fact that if we want to go green, it's going to cost more. This country has operated on the assumption for a long time that throwing away stuff is free, and we haven't paid for the consequences. But we will have to own. So if it's 3 cents a battery, we're going to have to bite that bullet.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think folks in general, they're getting kind of used to being seeing these fees. They kind of get the fact that somebody's got to pay for it, and unfortunately, we can't always get the elected officials to at the legislative level to get a bill through that would require the producers to do it. So sometimes we have to kind of just get a hybrid going so that we can get some kind of program going for the convenience of the consumers. Solar panels is one of our other recent adventures. We've realized that with the push for solar energy, which is great, we should all try to get solar on our rooftops as soon as possible. There's a downstream effect of that. These panels only last so long. And currently there is only one company that is actually taking their panels back and recycling them themselves at their cost. But they are traditionally supplying these panels to solar farms. And so they're not available to the general residential population or to the installers who install these panels in residential or small commercial settings. So we've been doing, we've been working with our friends in the solar industry who want to be greener. They know that they need to take a bigger role in the end of life of these products. And we're looking at reuse options. So we're working with them on that. And we're also looking at a minimum right now, just labeling the solar panels, because there's hazardous and non-hazardous solar panels out there in the world. And when these panels can be processed by facilities in California, which can't be done right now, but hopefully within a year that'll happen, then those facilities need to know what kind of panel are they dealing with. And right now, there's very few panel manufacturers that actually label what their panel is made of, so that you know if it's hazardous or non-hazardous inside of it. So we're working with the industry. They've been great to work with voluntarily. This is where we try to do voluntary if we can, and we're having great success with the solar industry to get them to voluntarily get their labeling straightened out so we'll all know what these are when they come off the rooftops.
Yeah, that sounds big. Any others you want to mention? We're going to take a break in a second, but I'm really interested in this work.
Thank you. Yeah, and we have a lot of information on our website.
Okay, good.
Select any product and just click on it, and then, of course, you can always contact us, and we're happy to talk and talk through anything that you may have a question about.
It's great. We're going to take a short break and talk about the Aero Awards presented by the California Product Stewardship Council. Our guest is Doug Kobold. He's the executive director of CPSC. This is Ecotopia on KZFR.
Staring back at
This is Ecotopia on KZFR 90.1 Chico. Our guest is Doug Kobold. He is the executive director of the California Product Stewardship Council. And we now want to ask him about the Aero Awards that are presented by CPSC. Can you tell us a little bit about what the purpose of the Aero Awards are and what your criteria are in making your selections?
Absolutely. So, almost right after CPSC was created back in 2007, we began our Aero Awards process. And what the idea was is to recognize either individuals, companies, organizations that are going beyond to help get product stewardship and extended producer responsibility pushed forward and advanced. And so what we basically do is we look at, we take nominations and we look at the companies or the individuals that are nominated and decide, have they done a great job in enhancing and promoting extended producer responsibility and product stewardship? And then how can we reward them for that? And that is through social media posts. We do an awards presentation every year at our statewide conference that we participate in for the California Resource Recovery Association. They're gracious enough to allow us to participate in their award ceremony by giving our own awards. And so these companies, these individuals get a lot of recognition from not only their own peers, but also through our social media posts, our press releases, to say, hey, this product or this company is out there and they're doing great things. Take a look at them.
Can you give us an example, perhaps something close to Chico?
Absolutely. I'm going to hold on to the last just because
it's our
award, but I'll be happy to cover our four awards.
Yeah, please. Out. Yes.
So we start with our Green Aero Award, and the Green Aero Award is basically to reward folks that are doing an excellent job in product design or redesign. And so our award winner this year was Sirius Signal, who is a company out of the Southern California. It's a California-based company who looked at the problem. This gentleman looked at the problem with marine flares. So if you're familiar with marine flares, every boat has to have marine flares. If you're inspected by Fish and Game or any of the folks that can, or the Coast Guard, they can actually cite you if you don't have marine flares. Now, typically marine flares last, their expiration is somewhere between 36 and 42 months, whether they've been used or not. And then you have to get rid of them and get new ones. Well, but here's the problem. The proper disposal of marine flares is extremely expensive. So what usually happens is these things either just sit or they get dumped illegally or they get dumped off at fire stations or places like that. And then now you've got the local government that's dealing with the cleanup of those flares. So Sirius Signal decided to make a difference. So what they did is they created a reusable one that can be, it's been Coast Guard approved for up to 3 miles out, and is approved, it's the only one that's approved for night and day use. Now, it doesn't replace the flares that you stick in a gun or if it's in a tube that will launch up 1,000 feet in the air, and that's for beyond 3 miles, you have to have that type as well. Or if you're above a 16-foot boat, you have to have that type as well. But at least it's replacing the ones that are held in your hand. And so what the Sirius Signal flare does is it's LED, and it has all the different coatings and colors that are needed. And again, it's Coast Guard approved. So here we're taking a product that's an extreme problem at the end of life and replacing it with something that can be used for a long time, maybe forever. And unfortunately, for the folks that don't dispose of these properly, say they'll light them up and drop them in the water and just let them burn out.
Oh, boy.
Each flare contaminates 240,000 gallons of water.
Oh, boy.
So you can imagine, like in a lake, how many of those it would take to really mess up a lake chemistry. So this is a great alternative to it. It's a great reuse type of alternative and replacing something that just is a single-use problem for folks in general. So we wanted to give Sirius Signal an award for their product that they have developed and are now they're marketing. You can find it out online, and it's actually starting to be carried in stores now too, in retail outlets.
Great.
Okay, and then we move on to our Bow and Arrow Award, and our Bow and Arrow Award is for coalition building and outstanding business partnerships. And we gave that award this year to Rethink Disposable. And so Rethink Disposable is a Bay Area-based organization that works with small businesses, especially like restaurants, to get them away from single-use utensils, single-use plates, single-use anything, into something more reusable. And there's an example on their own website there of a restaurant owner. She thought she was doing a great thing. She had compostable flatware, compostable forks, knives, and spoons, and compostable products. She later found out that all those compostable materials weren't being composted. They were being sent to landfill. And that's primarily because compostable plastic, for example, compostable silverware and flatware, does not compost in nearly enough time within
a compostable thing.
So it just ends up as landfill material.
Yeah.
So she moved to just reusable completely. And so we felt that Rethink Disposable has run a great campaign in the Bay Area, pushing folks forward, pushing businesses forward to be think more green, think more reusable. They were proudly awarded them that Bow and Arrow Award.
Right. Are they a nonprofit?
I'm sorry?
Are they a nonprofit?
They are.
How are they?
Yeah. They're actually they are sponsored by a lot of local government agencies and state government agencies and also private entities. Then our third award, our Infinity Award for service and take back, went to a local organization here, a local merchant here in Sacramento, who has an awesome idea where she... it's called Refill Madness in Sacramento, and the owner, Sloan, created this store because she just got tired of seeing all the waste with the single-use containers when you buy new dishwashing detergent or when you buy hand soap, or you buy lotion, just to see all the waste when you're done with the product inside. It gets popped hopefully in the recycle bin, but it doesn't always get recycled, and so she felt that there needed to be a better way to produce less waste and provide a good service to the consumers in Sacramento. And so she created a Refill Madness. It's done really well. She's hoping to scale it up in other communities. Of course, with COVID right now, many businesses won't be able to do much of anything right now, but she is hoping to scale it up and see if she can get this going in other communities.
Wow.
So she received our Infinity Award. And then I'm holding off the last one. You were right. It is one of your local folks that are entities that is very popular and very well known, and our Golden Arrow Award goes to a organization or a business that shows excellence in all the different categories I just mentioned through the Green, Bow and Arrow, and Infinity Awards. And so we awarded that to Sierra Nevada Brewery there in town. And we did that. I'm sure a lot of your listeners probably know of Sierra, but Sierra Nevada has gone way out of their way to be one of the more sustainable businesses, especially of its nature. My understanding is they have one of the biggest privately held solar arrays in the state, maybe in the nation. The majority of their activities, their power consumption needs, are generated by the solar farm they have on top of their roof. They grow their own barley and hops from their own fields, and so they are growing sustainably there. They also make sure they compost all of their leftover materials from their restaurant. And they are also one of the early embracers of the 1 pound reusable cylinders for propane, because they do a lot of those propane cylinders in their operations and in their restaurant, and they wanted to do something better, and so they adopted purchased a whole bunch of the refillable, reusable propane cylinders. And so because of their leadership in trying to set an example for their competitors and for other types of businesses, we wanted to especially recognize them with the Golden Arrow Award.
And you also had another award for somebody who you work with.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, so We do present two other awards, and we don't call them Aero Awards, but we present them at the same time.
Okay.
And so one is our Sponsor of the Year Award, and that goes to one of our sponsors who's going the extra mile as well, pushing producer responsibility and extended and product stewardship. And we gave that to the law offices of Gideon Kragoff down in the L.A. Basin area. Gideon has been serving the solid waste and recycling industry for well over a decade or two, and he is the general counsel of the California Waste and Recycling Association, which is a statewide organization. He was on the team that negotiated a $168 million settlement to remove trash from the Los Angeles River. And more recently, he was appointed to the South Coast Air Quality Management District by Governor Newsom to improve the air quality down there in the L.A. Basin area. So we wanted to recognize Gideon and his firm for being a leader in the legal sense as well for the solid waste and recycling industry and making sure that we're all doing the right thing. And then finally, another fairly close by neighbor of yours, we also like to recognize our contributors, our local jurisdictions, and so we looked at our associates. We call them our associates, and that's going to be cities or counties or staff therein. And we recognize the Tehama County Solid Waste Management Authority with the Associate of the Year Award. And that was because they've done an excellent job of pushing out EPR and product stewardship, not only just in their own jurisdiction, but also outside to their peers, their peer jurisdictions. Tehama County, you heard me mention about SB 212, the pharmaceutical take-back law. Tehama County went out on a limb, and before that law was passed their own local ordinance, and they did it knowing that there was a likelihood that their local ordinance would be preempted by the state law, which it did. When the law passed, theirs got preempted, but we really appreciated the elected officials in Tehama County for going the extra mile and making sure that if the law didn't pass, that the Tehama County residents would have some sort of option locally for drug take-back. They were one of basically 12 counties that had either passed or were working on passing ordinances at the local level because we couldn't get a solution done at the state level at that time. And L.A. County and Sonoma County were the other two that did not get their ordinances passed before the law was passed, but nine other counties did. And it did force the pharmaceutical industry to the table to do something statewide because they didn't want 58 different programs across the state.
It's amazing work. So many people working hard to do such good things. I have another question that I didn't send you. California seems to be the leader in so much of, especially environmental, but other social justice work. Are any other states following your model? Are other states, and do you interact with them? Do you know? We just have a couple minutes here, so.
Yeah, absolutely. No, California by far is the leader. We have the most extended producer responsibility and product stewardship laws on the books, followed closely by Washington, New York, and other states. But we are by far the leader. And so it's interesting that the industries pay very close attention to what happens in California because they are absolutely fearful that whatever happens in California will be done in other states or across the nation. And so we are absolutely the leaders in California.
And what do you see as the biggest challenge right now for the waste management world?
Well, our problem is basically because of the recycling crisis we're in right now with plummeting values of scrap material for like plastic, cardboard, paper, and with China no longer accepting the majority of what they used to accept from us to make into new products. We've seen just a plummet in the recycling market. A lot of materials are now going to landfill that weren't going to landfill before. So this is really the time to say, okay, we need to take a step back. Why are we producing all this? Why are we shoving all this off onto other markets? Why can't we change our ways here locally? And maybe we don't use plastic that isn't recyclable. Maybe we don't use as much packaging. Let's cut back rather than just assuming that we can send this all over the world and it'll get taken care of. And so this is a good time for producer responsibility and product stewardship to take hold and try and fix some of these things.
And finally, tell us how people can learn more about the California product Stewardship Council.
Absolutely. We have a website, calpsc.org. It's calpsc.org. And you can learn a lot about that. And then if you have any questions, you can email us at info@calpsc.org. And we monitor that on a regular basis. And we're always happy to respond to questions that folks may have. And then you might even get a phone call from me if I feel it's a question that needs a lot more information. I'll probably call you.
That's great. Thank you so much, Doug. We've been talking with Doug Kobold of the, he's the executive director of the California Product Stewardship Council.
You're having trouble saying that tonight.
I have trouble writing it, too.
Thank you, Doug. We'll also post the email and the website on our website, ecotopiakcfr.com. Thank you so much for being with us tonight on Ecotopia.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Ecotopia on KZFR. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, Ginger Nichols will be here with Radioactive. Contact us at ecotopiakzfr@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, feedback about shows, suggestions for shows, or people you'd like to hear. And remember, we're doing the Radical Reform series. We'd especially like to get suggestions on people who can talk us about radical reform in the way we live and think. Next week on Ecotopia, we'll talk with Matt Hearn. He's an educator and community leader in British Columbia. He has some radical ideas about the role of schooling, and he has established a program for immigrants that gives them job skills and a great education. And then the following week, we'll return to one of our most covered topics on Ecotopia, water.
And you can listen to our previous shows and find our list of resources on our website, ecotopiakzfr.com. But you can also get our programs as a podcast now through Anchor, Spotify, Apple, Google, and others. Thanks for listening.
Weaver, weaver, weaver me the sunshine out of the falling rain. Concrete crumble, shine on me again. The proud and the mighty all have stumbled, shine on me again now. Weave me the sunshine out of the fall, out of the falling. Weave me the hope of a new tomorrow and fill my cup again, fill it again now. Loving shine on me again, grows on the
Any longer, come on, shake your body, baby, do that conga. No, you can't control yourself any longer.